Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Terry. And this is Hell No, the radio show. Hell No, the radio show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature some guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. What we do is we give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is not democratic, it's not fascist, it's not politically correct or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. Go ahead and write down this telephone number and call me and Terry and share your thoughts on our discussion stirring topics on tonight's Hell No episode. Telephone number is 718-508-9419. Once again, that's 718-508-9419. Go ahead and write down that number because it's the same every week, and you all can listen online through our Facebook page and clicking on the link for the program, or again, call in to talk to us. We want to hear from everybody. Hell No is a one-hour show. We take your calls in the order we receive them, so sit tight. I want to, again, remind everybody that we can receive an email. Anyone who has a great show suggestion or comments or want to tell us how great we are or how annoying we are, it's all welcome. Email is hellnoradioshow@gmail.com. Again, Facebook is Hell No the Radio Show. Honestly, it's really easy if you just try the search bar in your Google, Yahoo, or whatever search you're using. Partial support for Hell No the Radio Show comes from our loyal sponsors, and as soon as Terry gets his butt in gear and calls into the program, he's going to tell us about them. While we wait for Terry to find the perfect spot to sit and a perfect signal from which to call, I'm just going to go ahead and do a rundown here of some of our discussion topics for tonight. For passing personages, we're going to talk about Gene Wilder. We have a hell yes about an Oklahoma tire shop. That's actually a good story. Terry's going to tell us all about lawyers. Apparently, not all lawyers are created the same. Some are extra crazy. Also, we're going to talk about Donald Trump and his visit to Mexico with the new president there, President Peña, I believe his name is. The former President Fox of a different party is not so happy, but lots of news about Donald Trump going to Mexico. We're also going to talk about some travel to Cuba. There was a landmark flight to Cuba. JetBlue made its flight today. We'll talk about that. I'm going to ask the question about back to school and how our kids are supposed to have a good future when they're not allowed or expected to do homework at home anymore and they don't get grades in the schools. Very interesting. We're also going to talk about basic vehicle maintenance. If you're out there driving a car, you should know some things about it. We'll talk about keeping venomous snakes in the state of Florida. We'll also continue with our tools series and how to use them. And tonight's tool is the saw, which is going to be fun because I didn't even tell Terry that we put that on there. We're going to do a segment amount of tools. We're going to do saws tonight. Our music is Copperhead Row by Steve Earle. Terry is delayed in calling us, so we're going to say hi to one of our lovely callers whose telephone number ends in 6838. Caller, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing well. And it was funny, before the show came on, I had 3 minutes and a few seconds to do something. I went and got a glass of water, and I thought, you know, I remember being in school. Between classes, we had 3-4 minutes. Wasn't that all the time in the world to do just about anything?
It really was. You could run to your car and grab something. You had enough time to run down and get Pepsi out of the vending machine if your school had that. It was enough time to gossip. Yeah, 3 or 4 minutes, you could get things done then.
You can make up, break up. Now flip that.
You were doing a lot more than I was, and I still
did. I went to the public school, ma'am.
Shall we go down that road?
You know what is funny, though? Now, you flip the coin and you give a bunch of adults 5 minutes to take a break from, let's say, a conference or a meeting, and you see how many of those adults can really take 5 minutes and actually show up. I mean, it's more like turns into 15 or 20. You're not even sure if all of them are even going to come back.
You're exactly right. And you know, I think there's probably several factors in that. When you talk about adults versus school, you knew your classmates, so they were also your playmates. So there was a camaraderie there. And there might be in this group of adults, may or may not be, it might be, I'm thinking of a conference, a professional conference, so there might be some camaraderie. The depth of conversation and that type of meeting may be more lengthy, but there's more
to
do.
Yeah, it could just also be lack of discipline, maybe, with most adults.
You're right. I think, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't really matter if I'm late. You know,
right. But now,
at that point, you've learned that.
Right. Now, when you're in school, though, you know, you knew out your 3 minutes between classes, you get your butt there on time. Hey, guess who showed up, by the way, while we were talking about back-to-school stuff? It's Mr. Terry, and he's on to tell us about tonight's sponsors. Yay!
Yay!
Well, I'm sorry about tardiness, but we're having problems with signal here tonight, and I apologize to everyone, but we got a big storm rolling in here, and my signal has just been erratic as can be. Finally,
well, sir, you were late for class. Have your name on the board with a check, but let's hear about our sponsors tonight.
Well, I'm going to talk about our fave rave, Miss Jane Flint, body worker and massage therapist extraordinaire. She is one of the finest of the finest, and we are very fortunate to have her as a sponsor. She is located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue. She is known nationally for her skills. She is educated in more than 15 different disciplines of massage therapy and body work. And by God, if you get a chance to have her work on you, you're lucky. She is absolutely phenomenal. So let's talk about her phone number for a moment. If you're within 100 miles, as I'm always fond of saying, it's worth the trip to go see her. Again, she's located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, just a couple blocks off the expressway, 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue. Phone number 414-321-9030, 414-321-9030. And with the Olympics just finishing up, she's one of the very, very few people who is certified in the Olympic activated stretching routines that they've got. Minimally stressing routines that get maximum results. This year, of course, everybody was looking at the purple circles on all of the athletes from the cupping. That's the latest craze there. And, you know, it has some benefit, but what they don't show you is the number of therapists that they have there who are incredibly well schooled, working on those athletes constantly. Those athletes, I'll bet that a swimmer, for instance, gets worked on twice a day, just to try to keep them where they need to be at their very, very best, and to help repair any of the stresses, strains, and what have yous that are occurring during the events. Once again, Ms. Jane Flint, healthcare massage therapy, located at 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 414-321-9030. Oh, boy. If I lose you, keep watching for me to come back in, because I'm not real sure about this connection. It took me, I don't know, 11, 12 tries to try to get through. And, boy, we got some real weather coming in here. So, what were you nice folks talking about?
Oh, we were just chatting about
partying late.
Right, how 3 minutes and 28 seconds when you're a kid in school between classes, that's a long enough time to do just about anything. And then we're just killing some time. This is something I thought about before the show, and I had 3 minutes and 28 seconds to go get a glass of water, do whatever I did. I thought I got plenty of time if I'm a high schooler or whatnot. But at any rate, do you want to start off with passing personages? talk about Mr. Gene Wilder?
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should talk about Gene Wilder. He passed away at age 84. Gave a lot of us a lot of laughs, a lot of fun. He was best known, of course, for his part as Willy Wonka. He was Dr. Frankenstein, of course, in Young Frankenstein. He was in quite a few of Mel Brooks' movies. He was in Blazing Saddles. Funny guy, very, very funny guy. He was married to Gilda Radner. She passed away quite some time ago, and he became very involved in cancer fundraising, et cetera, because of the loss of Gilda. He died of complications of Alzheimer's, and that seems to be getting more and more and more people these days, something that we barely heard of years ago. All I have to say about that is watch your aluminum consumption, folks. Most of the city water these days is treated with aluminum sulfate. And aluminum, of course, is one of the primary ingredients in the plaque that ends up attacking the brain in Alzheimer's. The exact direct connection, we're not 100% sure of, but I personally have stayed away from anything that contains aluminum, including cookware and so forth, unless it's lined or anodized. Same thing with deodorants. Most of the antiperspirants have aluminum in them, including the crystal deodorant that we all hear about, you know, that everybody says is natural. Well, it's natural, but it's natural aluminum sulfate. Any words about Mr. Wilder before we go on?
You know, I don't really have much to add. I'm a little freaked out right now about what I might have around me that has aluminum in it. I thought, well, I don't drink tap water, so that's good. But no, I thought that, you know, Willy Wonka, as you know, the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory as a movie, as a kid when that came out, and I think it was probably you know, I don't know what year it came out, but I was a kid and it was just the greatest movie. You know, talk about imagination, you know, as adults might have thought, you know, that's kind of creepy, he's creepy, but you know, the imagination in movies like that, we don't, you know, maybe it's still around and today I just don't watch a lot of little kids movies, but I thought it was a pretty, you know, as far as an out there wild imagination filled movie, it was tops in my book.
Wherever he is, he's making them laugh.
I'm sure he is.
So, onward, upward. We have a moment of silence for Mr. Gene Wilder.
A moment of silence for Mr. Gene Wilder.
Maybe Frau Blücher may have something to say about that. One of my favorite characters in Young Frankenstein. Frau Blücher. Could never quite get that right.
Right. So, in other news of the living, quite much in the living and also in the news and keeps a lot of people living on the couch watching it. Donald Trump's been in the news again. He visited the president of Mexico today, President Peña, I believe his name is. The last guy who was the president of Mexico, his last name was Fox, and he was of a different party than this new guy. And the last guy just had awful things to say. Oh, he's not coming here. We want nothing to do with him. People in Mexico hate him. He's an awful hated person. And I watched the speeches that both of them gave to Mexico today, and they seemed to get along quite well. It reminded me of kind of a Reagan, not really Reagan and Gorbachev, because U.S. and Mexico aren't at odds like that. But so I mean, they were, but it was like a, hey, let's get along. And one of the things that was talked about was, and people asked, well, what about this wall he plans to build and all this? And he's now, Donald Trump is now talking in turn. He sounds like a business person. I mean, he's talking about these are bargaining tools for discussion and you know, negotiation and this and that. You know, let's, what are your cards, let's lay them out, let's see what we want to do here. But I mean, the point that I think that is good about it is he's doing something that we haven't seen in a while, which is, and he's acting really presidential in my opinion. He also went to Louisiana, you know, visited with folks there. I didn't see other candidates or even our current president down there. Michigan, he's out there. I mean, he's everywhere. He's talking to inner city blacks. You know, most people that, you know, Mitt Romney never even bothered. He's like, they're never ever going to vote for me. Trump's out there. He's like, hey, I want to talk to them, see what they're doing, you know. He's out there, and he's, I just think as far as a campaign is going, a candidate, I think that people like seeing that. You know, people still say what they're going to say about him. And a lot of people I talk to, they're like, man, I wish that guy would just shut his mouth sometimes. But anyhow, the trip to Mexico was good. And tonight on Fox News, and actually pretty much every channel out there, it's at 8 o'clock, so halfway through our show. So if anyone wants to probably record it, but there's going to be his immigration speech and talking about immigration. And some of the things that he's been talking about is, at a town hall meeting, he addressed the audience. He's talking to them, what about people who came here? They didn't come here legally, but they've been here for 20 years. They're working, their kids are in schools, they own shops, and they do this, they do that. Find a way for them to work within the law. I mean, he's kind of walked back this whole, catapult everyone back across from where they came. So, anyways, that's been in the news lately and something to keep watching. I think, it seems like he's, in my opinion, the more coaching he gets and the more he, gets comfortable in his skin doing this, the more he's looking like a president and less like a wild man. So mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing.
Well,
in other news,
onward and upward.
This is quite the quick with this one before we get to your story about lawyers, because I don't hear this. But there was a new flight to Cuba today. JetBlue made its first U.S. commercial flight landing in Cuba, and it is big news. They had, the flight marks the first latest development in U.S.-Cuba since they restored diplomatic ties in 2014. I don't know how long it was since we had commercial. I think they might be the first. This is an awful news story I'm reading because it doesn't even say that. But anyways, it's a big deal. You can go to Cuba now taking JetBlue. There you go.
Yeah, if you want to subject yourself to JetBlue, not my favorite airline, I'll tell you.
Or Cuba.
I don't know.
They have really cool cars there. Cuba, they got all the 1950s cars rolling around. It's kind of weird. There's no ships in the ports and sailboats, but Cuba would be an interesting place to visit, I'll tell you that.
Well, it's actually a very interesting place to visit. I've been there numerous times.
But not on JetBlue.
Not on JetBlue, no. I actually took Cuban Airlines. Surprisingly well-maintained planes look like they were put together by patchwork quilts. It's a very odd thing. Like the cars, they didn't have a lot to work with. So the Cubans did what they could with what they had.
All right. Well, another thing that we can do well with what we have is lawyers. And as you were telling me before the program, you had an interesting meeting with a lawyer, and you've probably talked to many lawyers before in your travels and businesses and whatnot, and you're probably used to dealing with a certain caliber of professional, and it sounds like you ran into someone whose cheese might have slid off their cracker.
I don't know, man. It was a very frightening conversation. I called this gentleman to see about making an appointment with him. We had previously discussed this, and he listened to virtually nothing I said, ranted, raved, and repeated himself, and at one point said, I repeat myself three times. I'm thinking, what in the hell is going on here? He really did. He really did that. I was amazed. He didn't listen to anything I was saying. And what was interesting is, in retrospect, after the conversation, he went to another attorney and said I hadn't listened to what he was saying. Ironic, isn't it, that his view was that I wasn't listening. He just talked over me. He just continually talked over me. And no matter how polite I was and no matter how many times I reaffirmed that I understood what he was trying to say, he just kept talking and saying I didn't know what I was talking about. Can't do this, can't do that. Okay. Finally, I gave up and said, sayonara. This individual, all I could think of is, imagine him in front of a jury. I mean, he's a he's primarily a defense lawyer. He works on other things, but mostly a defense lawyer. I was astounded. I also was very angry about the fact that he just simply talked over me, and he was such a bombast that, you know, it was not within his capability of listening to another human being. Somehow, I guess I was a lower form of life. I've seen more than one defense attorney like this, and what's interesting is how much of what they do is pure bullshit. And it's not just the defense attorneys. I've seen over and over again these people who, you know, do idiotic things and call themselves attorneys. And they depend upon just bullying people. Just bullying folks. It's not good.
I have some thoughts on it.
What time do you have there, buddy?
My time? 7:51 Central.
Okay.
So here are my thoughts on this. Lawyers are somewhat like doctors in the sense that people go to them expecting them to be able to be magician, fix everything, play God, what have you. And I think at times, because professionals and lawyers, well, lawyers or doctors, and lawyers in this case, maybe are treated by most people as being, you know, at this level of echelon of professional and service that they really are above and different from everything else. And so most people are, you know, and it's how dare you ever question them. You know, it's a personality trait. I also think sometimes there are people who go into certain professions for certain reason and certain personality glitches manifest. And I mean, really, I mean, if the man can go through law school, pass his classes, pass the bar exam, anyone can be a lawyer or a doctor. You just, how much are you going to willing to go through to get all the school and the licensing done? But it's kind of like maybe that guy never gets really challenged by other people. You know, you wonder, you know, all the clients are idiots. They're all idiots. None of them listen to me. They're all, you know, you ever wonder if one of his colleagues is like, hey, Bob, maybe it's you. Do you ever think about that? You know, but no, there's, I don't know. Anyways, I'm sorry that you had that negative experience.
Because I lost a lot of respect for that individual very quickly. When someone acts like that, and by the way, another, we will call it gently an idiosyncrasy, is that he won't drive. He has a couple of young ladies who are paralegals or legal students or something, law students, and they drive him everywhere. Very, very bizarre, in my view.
Does he sit in the front or the back?
You know, I don't know that, but I would guess in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Very bizarre.
He's probably very important. He has a lot of people yell out on the phone.
Yeah.
Probably yells at people the whole way to court. They probably hang up, and he probably doesn't even know. You know, they're not even there. Just opens his flip phone and yells into it, and then flips it closed and goes into court and yells at people. Makes a lot of money doing
it.
Hey, we got one of our callers hanging out, one of our callers who we haven't heard from in a while. Should we see what this gentleman has to say? Any advice on shopping for lawyers? Hey, buddy, your telephone number ends in 0619. You're on with Nick and Terry.
Good evening, guys. How's life?
Hey,
life
buddy,
is good.
Good to hear you guys' voice. I think this would be a good time to bring up a point I've been thinking about. When you seem to lose faith in people, whatever, invest 5 minutes some time, go on YouTube, as much as whoever hates it, but get James Brown, musician, singer James Brown. He had a duet with Pavarotti, and it's, you watch them in this 5 minute video and how they sing and act together. it gives you faith. Two giants, two icons in the music industry, how they mesh and feel about each other during this video. It gives you faith that there is hope to love your fellow man.
Well, I haven't seen that video, and I'd be very interested in seeing it. What you're talking about is a sort of synergy that happens when you get a couple of really good musicians together. It doesn't always happen, but it can really be wonderful when it does. And that I would, I'm going to have to look that up, and thanks for bringing that to our attention. That's a very interesting combination.
It's his song, It's a Man's World,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to say it's heartwarming, but it just gives faith that, you know, there is love in this world that, you know, you could express.
Well, the different styles of music that are out there often mesh in unusual ways. We've talked about one of my favorite groups, Nightwish, where they have combined very, very hard metal music with classical music and opera. And it works unbelievably well. I mean, it's just fantastic stuff. The folks from Nightwish are all classically educated, and it's an amazing synergy that you get there too. Speaking of music, we're going to do something tonight, and let's see if everybody can guess who it's by, called Copperhead Road. And the reason that we're going to do that song will be apparent after we take our break, but I will simply say that we're going to talk about legislation in Florida governing the ownership of venomous reptiles. And that may sound like a really out there sort of subject. Now, our regular listeners know that I work in herpetology and herpetological research. And certainly the venomous part of that is an even narrower niche. But you are going to be amazed, I hope, at how much of what's going on with that legislation typifies what is going on in this country right now. And has been going on, I would say, for a while, and getting worse and worse and worse. So, Maestro, are you ready to do Copperhead Road?
Si, senor.
Anybody, any of our callers know who that's by?
Of course.
Play it on us.
Steve Earle.
That's right, Steve Earle. Rockabilly man. Did we lose him?
At an auction at the Mason Blast. hammer and he looked inside. Well, him and my uncle tore that engine down. I still remember that rumbling sound. And then the sheriff came around in the middle of the night. Heard mama crying that something wasn't right. He's headed down to Knoxville with a weekly load. You can smell a whiskey burning down Copperhead Road.
And Richie Bennett on guitar, Copperhead Road. Great song.
Yay!
Yay. Nick, you still
Ooh.
With us?
Yes, I am. And you know what?
Oh, good.
That was a good song. 4 minutes and 30
snakes.
Seconds of it.
Yep, we're going to talk about snakes, aren't we?
Yes, we
we're
are.
Going
we're
going to
talk
about
snakes and lizards.
Oh.
And we're going to talk about venomous snakes and lizards. What's going on in Florida is another arm of the ever-present nutballs of America, sometimes known as PETA and HSUS, along with a few others. And what's transpiring to most of you is going to sound rather bizarre and like, who cares? Well, there are some of us who do care because we're involved in work or research. There are some of us who care because we think it's our right to keep animals that we have an interest in, to be able to work with them, to be able to study them. And in this case, it's venomous animals. Now, I do not personally keep any venomous animals in Florida. As a matter of fact, I don't keep any venomous animals in most places. I have a single facility out toward the western United States where I have some venomous animals. And no, it's not in Wisconsin, and no, it's not anywhere else nearby. But going on is a legislative boondoggle of the worst order. They're trying to stop individuals from owning venomous reptiles. Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. Why is this important? It's important because of critical thinking. It's important because of what happens to statistics, and it's important because of what happens when you base what you're doing on emotion rather than facts. And we are doing so much of that nowadays in our politics and everywhere else. People aren't thinking, they're not researching, they're not looking, they're just reacting. Oh my God, venomous snakes, we're all going to die. That I'm going to give you is that never in the history of Florida I'm not sure about the rest of the United States. I haven't heard of an incident, but never in the history of Florida has a venomous snake or venomous lizard that someone owned bitten another individual and caused them harm. So in other words, people who kept venomous snakes, the only people who were ever envenomated were the people who owned the snake. There's never been one single case, not one. And venomous snakes have escaped. There's no two ways about it. Well, how come nobody's been bitten? Nick, you want to take a shot at that?
Because the venomous snakes aren't hunting people?
That's one really good point.
And the snakes are more afraid of people than the people are of the snakes.
Yes,
ding,
most
ding,
people
ding,
would
ding.
Disagree with that, but it's very true. If you look at something statistically, if you do not have a certain number in your sample, it is called statistically insignificant, meaning that you can't even count it. With this particular case, we don't even have one example of it happening. They are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to legislate this and creating this huge brouhaha within the FWC, that's the Florida Wildlife Conservation Group, they call themselves that, that's the enforcement people. They also have enforcement people who are creating legislation. Nick, as a lawyer, does that sound like a good idea?
No, wrong. That's for Congress.
Exactly. They have no business creating legislation. They're cops. That's what they are. Now, cops are trying to seize more control over the people who keep venomous snakes. And there have, as I said, I'm not going to tell you there haven't been escapees. There have been escapees. Interestingly, there are four or five of them that I know about. And each time the animal was found, brought back in. Nobody was hurt. Those of you who listen to me on the radio here know that I have told you over and over again that snakes will not pursue people. They don't. The snake will find the darkest, deepest corner it can and hide. And, you know, the way they're found is usually they're traveling from point A to point B quickly to try and get the hell out of Dodge. And somebody spots them on a lawn or something like that, and then somebody with some expertise comes and gets them. Well, here we are, tempest in a teapot, with no validity. No validity. We don't have a single case of someone being bitten. And they're doing their best to legislate this right out the window so that people who have an interest in working with these animals, have an interest in studying these animals, breeding these animals, cannot do it. They have made it outlandishly difficult. Permits up the wazoo, you have to have 1,000 hours of experience. Hell, you don't have to have that kind of experience to do much of anything these days. Find me a doctor that's got 1,000 hours of experience before he starts doing surgery. I'd love to see it. It doesn't happen. And by that I mean he doesn't do 1,000 hours worth of surgery before he's allowed to do that or be involved in it under the tutelage of someone else. But that's what's required for a venomous reptile license now in Florida. Now they're trying to go beyond that. They've split the snakes up into a whole bunch of different groups. So this one is, you know, it's like level orange and level red and so on and so forth based on the alleged danger of the animal. Yet, there's never anyone who's been bitten by them. Why are we wasting time, wasting money, instead of putting that money toward conservation, which is what that outfit is called? You know, they call themselves Wildlife and Conservation. That's, you know, that's their DNR, Wildlife and Conservation. If you're concerned with conservation, get off the bullshit. Stop getting into these petty squabbles over things that don't count and put your money where your mouth is and do some conservation. I was reading yesterday online, they post every single bust that they do, the wildlife cops here in Florida. And I'm not blaming this on them, by the way. You know, they're being pushed around by the guys above them and the people around them. Yes, there are some that are not very good, and there are some who are Barney Fifes and you know, so on. But a lot of them are good guys. And a lot of them find what they're doing very distasteful. They're issuing, you know, all these citations for things that are really meaningless. It'd be one thing if there were lots of people out there breaking, you know, serious laws and killing millions of endangered species, blah, 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 blah. But that's not what's going on. A lot of what they do or have to do has to do with marine life and fishing and, you know, taking the wrong size red snapper and that sort of thing. Well, that's fine. If you're, you know, if you're breaking the law and you're taking animals that you shouldn't be taking like that, okay, go get them, give them some tickets. But let's get back to what I was talking about. Let's backtrack again. As much as you may not like or even fear venomous reptiles, if there is no evidence for it, what are you doing? You're fear-mongering, you're wasting money, and you are taking away from other people the right to do what they want to do, keeping these animals, studying these animals, working with these animals. You think that's not going on in a thousand other parts of our life? People knee-jerk, they get all wound up about, oh, my God, you know, a million people are going to be killed and blah, 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 blah. There isn't even one. Not even one bite, much less a death. Statistically insignificant. This is what they throw in front of us time and time again, Nick. Not just with venomous reptiles, but a whole lot of other stuff that they waste time and money on. And the victimless crimes that they continually are harping on.
Well, and so you get a bad law. You get a bad law on the books. What's the remedy for a bad law? You sue to have the law held unconstitutional, but you'd have to be charged, convicted, take it up on appeal, and I don't know how many people. There would be so much time and money invested in that. You'd almost also have to have the backing of like a bar association or some larger group. And it really, honestly, when it comes down to a law like this, I don't know that anyone, I don't know who's going to go fight that fight. You know, most people, what they'll do is say, okay, well, bad legislation, bad on Florida. I'm going to go to, you know, Mississippi and try to do it there. I mean, that's sort of the mentality. They say, oh, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I can either run afoul of the law and be a outlaw because I'm doing something that's not really causing a problem or a threat. Or, I mean, it's ridiculous. I agree. Absolutely ridiculous.
But the other, you just brought up the other point I was going to make. They are creating criminals by what they're doing. People who already own these animals and own them legally and have gone through all kinds of hell to get these silly-ass permits, with the next step that they're going to take, they will create criminals. All these people will become criminals. They'll have one of three choices. One, they euthanize all their animals. They kill them. Boy, doesn't that sound like fun? Two, they surreptitiously let them go somewhere. That's horrible. These are non-native animals for the most part. They do not belong in our environment. That's just awful. But that's what a desperate person might do. They're so torn between not wanting to kill the animal and, you know, these were their favorite creatures, on and on and on. The third thing is they become outlaws. And there becomes a black market of sorts. Create your own black market then. Lots of animals die when they start putting them into pots and things like that to get them from one place to the other.
Well, here's another thing too. And what happens when one of the children at that house is having nightmares, because they're normally having nightmares at that age, and the nosy neighbor says those ne'er-do-wells next door with those snakes, they're beating their kids, they're beating their kids. And then law enforcement comes in and you get written up and all these charges for illegal snakes and all that, and then social services, you criminal, outlaw, your kid, bad, you know, kids could get taken. I mean, you think about downstream,
yep,
how, you know, one stupid effing law can really screw can really screw someone's life up, especially if, you know, how do you know all those people even know that they're, you know, that you're assuming that if they make one of those choices, they're even aware that there is that new law. Ignorance of not knowing is not a defense.
You know, I agree. I hear what you're saying, Terry, and I haven't had that particular experience. But I know that there was a time where I was acting power of attorney for someone who was completely incapacitated. And I had to stand up for what her wants would be, and to advocate for her with her physicians and with the other medical staff. And for several, and this was, you know, long term, for several days, I felt very discounted, very less than, not heard. I heard clearly what they were saying. I just felt like they did not hear what I was saying. They didn't care what I was saying. And when I finally stood up and announced, no, this discharge is not going to happen, I was threatened with having security called on me. Now, granted, you know, everything worked out and security wasn't called. But again, it is, I'm sorry about my little dog, it is where you're creating criminals who aren't criminals at all. They're actually not doing bad deeds in any way. They're absolutely asserting themselves. They understand what they're doing with. It really is. I hear what you're saying.
Let's just jump to another example here. Do we still have our other caller on the line? We still have
Sam. Yes, we do.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. For how many years were people who owned motorcycles looked at as the dirt of the earth, when in actuality the number of bikers who were truly, you know, violent, badass individuals was a significantly small minority? And yet anybody who had a motorcycle or a leather jacket was a bad person. It's exactly the same thing. They're a minority. Now more and more people are owning motorcycles. And it's finally getting to the point where, you know, your doctor, your lawyer probably has an outrageously expensive Harley Davidson. But for many, 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 many years, people would say, oh, there's going to be a biker party. Oh, my God, you know, call the police, call the feds, call this, call that.
Freak out.
And, you know, nothing happened. And when you look at the, if there's a biker, for instance, if there's a biker entertainment thing that goes on, they tend to be more peaceable than country western shows and rock shows, and far and away more peaceable than rap shows. They tend to be self-policing, and if one of them gets out of line, another one grabs them up by the neck, sits them down, and says, shut up, you're drunk, and, you know, they keep an eye on their own. I wish to hell that more people would do that.
In Milwaukee this weekend, they're having the Milwaukee Rally, and a lot of us that are bikers say that there's going to be 100,000 of my closest friends here this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it is.
Yep. And even the outlaw bikers, when things like that go on, behave themselves. You know, they're not big on making a mess of things, not during those things. I mean, how often do you hear about problems up at Sturgis? God knows.
Never. Or police bust people for drinking and, you know, bad registration and stuff like that out at Sturgis. They make a killing on that, actually.
Yep.
But they also take care of themselves. I mean, they know their limits. They know how they're going to, they know how they expect to be treated. And therefore, they set that expectation for every other member there. And that self-policing that you talked about, I think that is so important in that, you know, the cops intervening is certainly good, but if they were not self-policing, there would be more cop interventions needed.
This is a perfect parallel to what I'm talking about with the venomous animals. The bikers were in a minority. They were looked at because they were allegedly dangerous. And instead of looking at reality, they looked at potential. Big, tough guys with weather jackets on motorcycles. Potential? Violence? Okay, there's potential. But if that potential isn't realized, it becomes the same thing, statistically insignificant. Did not even be brought up. Don't care how big and strong somebody is. It has nothing to do with the fact of them being violent or nonviolent.
This boils down to two words. Number one word is ignorance, and number two is fear. We are fearful of that which we are ignorant. And the same thing that you're talking about with laws about venomous snakes, bikers, it's also now how people are being brought up and sectioned off from each other. One of our callers just talked about find your own tribe. Now, while that's a good thing, there's good to be said from that, but people are so afraid of what they don't know, and now it's people who are, you know, you see it also in politics, different parties, people are almost a little afraid, and the stuff that they think about, the other people that they don't really know, they're not talking to those other people, they have no earthly idea the things they think. People from one state to the next, they hear things that they think, and then they go there, wow, it's totally a normal place like anywhere else. Between different countries, everyone goes to the bathroom, eats, and sleeps, you know. I mean, we're not all that different. But people are just we're conditioned by fear. Fear is a motivator, is one of the biggest tools that's used to control society. Fear is the basis of advertising. We buy, and really, if you think about it, whether it's fear of being shunned for not looking good enough, fear of not having the safest thing, fear, it's if you don't have this, you are in big trouble. And so fear is the motivator behind everything from selling tires to creating laws about snakes, and keeping people ignorant is the thing that keeps the fear going, because if you sprinkle a bunch of knowledge on the fear, that, you know, you don't have your ignorance. The ignorance is like the catalyst to the fear fire. And
the smaller the minority, the easier it is to squash them, and the easier it is to make them look foolish. The bikers now have gone from being a tiny minority to a very large minority. Maybe someday even a majority of people will own motorcycles or motorbikes or scooters or whatever they might have. Some two-wheeled motorized with devices. But, when you're talking about venomous snakes, there's a handful of people who work with them and a handful of people who really have an interest in them and enjoy them and work around them. More than you'd think, actually. A handful is really not being accurate. But you got these idiots. Senator Bill Nelson from Florida is one of the dumbest fools I have ever run into in my lifetime. How that man ever gets up in the morning and figures out L and R on his shoes, I don't know. Maybe he's got an assistant that's paid to do that. The man's an imbecile. He's an absolute imbecile and another bombastic fool. And I'm not afraid to say that about Nelson. He's just an idiot. I've tried on a number of occasions to talk to him about some of his ill-conceived legislation that he's coming up with. And he's being fed this legislation by HSUS, PETA, and a couple of other radical animal rights groups. And he's being paid very handsomely by these people, very handsomely. They are supporting his candidacy. That's a nice way of saying, you know, they're pushing the buck, to say, like going out of style. And they know every trick in the book to get the maximum amount of cash to the people that they want.
Well, Terry, if you can get enough money and have more money than them, then maybe we can kick it the other direction.
And good luck on that, huh? Good luck.
You could have a bake sale, maybe a pancake supper, I don't know. You'd have to have a lot of bake sales. They got a lot of money, those groups.
Have an incredible amount of money. Well,
hey, you know what we have 5 minutes left, and it's our tools segment. I'm sticking to tools, and I'm springing this one on you. No, it's not springs. It's saws. Tell us about saws, Terry.
Saws. Gosh, one of my favorite tools. Of course, most tools are my favorite tools. We have saws for woodworking. We have saws for metalworking. We have saws for working plastics. We have saws that work for laminates. My gosh, we've got a ton of saws. We've got power saws. We have hand saws. And I think for tonight's show, we will stick with the hand saws. We'll start out with the hand-operated saws. Wood saws, boy, they're becoming a thing of the past. People don't have the patience to learn how to use them. They still very much have a place in the toolbox. Believe me, they do. Years ago, Carpenter would have quite an assortment of saws that he traveled with. And let's just go through a few of those. He would have a rip saw, and that saw was cutting rapidly with the grain, the long way, on a board. The rip saw has a particular set to the teeth. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's the angle that the teeth are set at, and they would have a particular cut to the teeth, the way they're filed. Rip saws tend to be fairly coarse. Then we have a crosscut saw made to cut across the grain. These saws came in varying lengths, depending upon what you were doing. Nowadays, most of them are these little shorty toolbox saws. They have what we call aggressive tooth patterns in these little toolbox saws. They are modeled after Japanese tooth patterns, very similar to Japanese tooth patterns on their saws. The Japanese saws, however, for wood, differ in one very, very, well, in many ways, but in one very important way. You don't push them, you pull them. And the blades are much thinner, much, much thinner. Pull saws, the Japanese pull saws come in many varieties. They do very fine work, and if you can get yourself used to pulling rather than pushing, you can work wonders with those Japanese saws. They're very fast to work with also. They come in, of course, rip and cross-cut, but they also come in combination tooth varieties that you can use either way. We've got back saws. Back saws are short, usually. They have a folded brass back on them, a thick brass back to keep the saw blade rigid, and those are used primarily for doing joints in wood. We have a similar saw that is smaller. It looks like a back saw. The handle's a little different. It's called a Gent saw, spelled G-E-N-T, Gent saw. And the Gent saw, again, is used for fine work, especially making joints in wood. We have coping saws. Those are the ones that have the spring frame, the high-arched frame, and you put tension on by twisting the handle, and very thin blades that look like jigsaw blades. As a matter of fact, many of them use what amounts to just a slightly modified jigsaw blade. And the blades come with many different varieties and many different coarseness of teeth. They're made for getting into corners, doing fine work, making swirly patterns, and so forth. Then we've got another type of saw, and that is our hacksaw. Hacksaw is made mostly from metal and plastics and other things that are tougher and harder. It has a frame, a metal frame, and you tighten the blade to get tension on it. Many types of blades in the hacksaw, or can be used in the hacksaw, and many degrees of coarseness. They range from about 8 teeth per inch to 32 per inch, and there are even a few that are finer than that for doing especially fine work on machining stuff. Hacksaws are poorly understood by the average person, and most people ruin the blade in no time at all by putting pressure on going both directions. You only put pressure on in the direction that the teeth are facing, and then you ease up the pressure to pull it back. That's how you save that blade and keep it from wearing out after two or three or four strokes. By the way, you can cut backward with a hacksaw, and you can turn the blade in various angles and ways to make it fit into places that other saws can't get to. There are also hacksaws that have no frame, and they have various names for them, but they're essentially a handle with a short backing for the blade, almost infinitely adjustable, and they're sometimes called jab saws, and those suckers are for getting into places where you can't get with a regular hacksaw, and you got to get the top of a bolt off or cut a nut that's halfway buried into the frame of your car, then you would use something like that. One other wood saw that I haven't mentioned is a jab saw in wood that's used for when you're doing cutout work. In other words, when you're cutting through a board to put an opening in or something like that, it's a small pointy saw with a handle that looks like a little gun handle on it, another type of jab saw. Oh, gosh, I could go on for hours. That's the bad part, isn't it? How much time we got left, Nick? Nick? Oh, Nick. Anybody else out there?
Sorry, I was on mute. I was just
talking. I'm here.
But the rain just hit us. We ran over time, but I found that very entertaining. Very interesting and informative.
We'll pick up at another point in time and start talking about more saws, because I just barely scratched the surface.
Barely.
Good night. Good night.
Thanks,
good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See y'all later.